Warning.
The following podcast may have material or language unsuitable for people under the age of 18 or be inappropriate for a workplace environment. If you're easily offended by content of this type, please stop this recording now. Broadcasting from an air-conditioned dustbin somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, Ypres. An off-color hamster currently disguised as a 24-year-old human male talks about anime, manga, and his singing Jack of Potatoes, but mostly about anime. And now, here comes the guy, whether be hamster or man, has many different configurations, just like Dan Gaio. Here's Ypres! Hey, howdy, hey, it's me, I'm on a yo-yo. Hi, guys, welcome back to the show. First of all, let me say thank you very much to everyone who listened to and downloaded the show. I'm really impressed by how many people downloaded and listened to the show. I have felt like I'd get maybe 10, 20 subscribers, but according to the stats on Podomatic, I've got 80 subscribers. Now, I don't know how much of that is automatic and how much of that is actual people going click, click, clickety, click, 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 you know? And I've got about, I think it was like 20 or 30 downloads. But see, the thing is, I haven't got the premium service on Podomatic, so I can't tell what individual shows are being downloaded. What am I saying, individual shows? There's only test file and... Anyways, don't mind me. Again, sorry to go off track like that. Hi guys, and welcome back to the show again. This is the second time I've said hi to you guys, and the second time I've welcomed you back, but hey, I can't say it enough. Sorry I've been so late getting the second show out, and I know if you're on the forums listening to my rant, you'll notice that I put up details for show number 3. That's amazing. I'm not only here in the present, I'm in the future as well. Sorry, that should be show number 2. I'm very sorry to people who read it and said, show number 3? He hasn't even got show number 2 done. Anywho's, the reason why I was late was exams, and I had no way to concentrate on the show. I'm really sorry for everyone who was listening, who was waiting for the show. I know I said it'd be about a week or two, but the exams left me so burnt out that I just couldn't concentrate on the show. Anyways, I've got a great show lined up for you today. I've got just regular news. I've only got one anime review. I only got a chance to watch one anime over the last couple of weeks. Any books that I've been reading, I've been study books, so no manga review. But I do have a special interview lined up afterwards for you guys to listen to. It's very good, and you might like it, even if I do sound spastic on it. Anyways, going straight into the news. And this is coming from the headlines at ANN. You can check them out at animenewsnetwork.com. Flash! Advent Children is popular! What the hell? Of course we knew it was popular. Anyways, Final Fantasy VII, Advent Children, has sold over 2.4 million copies worldwide, according to a report by on Square Enix. About 1.3 million have been sold in the US, 1 million in Japan, and 100,000 in Europe. Okay, that's pretty good. I watched Final Fantasy VII. I have to say that I like Final Fantasy VII, but like a lot of Final Fantasy RPGs, I can only hold my attention on that thing for more than 10-20 minutes at a time, and then after that it kind of gets boring and trite, and I'm not one of these people that spends their entire time in Final Fantasy exploring every nook and cranny, playing every minigame. No, it doesn't work for me. I get bored easy with RPGs. Along to the next article, AIC enlists university in Singapore. Nanyang Technological University in Singapore has signed an agreement with AIC to jointly develop anime for the Japanese market. This marks the first time companies in Singapore and Japan are collaborating in the anime industry. The Dean of the School for Computing Engineering at the university said production cost and time for a particular series could be cut by 40%. Now, hang on a second. Why in the hell is a university involved in the production of an anime? Oh, it could be that because they're outsourcing, from what I can tell, the computer engineering. So if they're outsourcing to the university, that means that they don't have to really pay the university students anything. It would go towards their course credit, so you know, AIC serves a bundle. Well, maybe that's it. Anyways, one piece of information that I did find interesting on today's headlines. Tales of Symphonia Anime. UFO Tibble, whatever the hell they are, will produce a Tales of Symphonia OAV series for release in Japan next year. The series, based on the popular Namco RPG, will be directed by Haro Tonozaki, with character design by Akira Matsushima. Now, that's kind of interesting because, as far as I know, Kosuke Fujisima, I got that right, didn't I? Oh My Goddess? The original one, he did the character designs for the first game, so I don't understand why they didn't rehire him, or maybe they're just going to take it in a different direction. They won't follow the course of the anime. I don't know. I bought Tales of Symphonia about a year ago on the recommendation of Newtype USA, and I played for about 5 minutes, and somebody distracted me, and I put it away, and that was it for an entire year. I only got back to playing it last week. You know, you think, hang on a second, a year? You forgot about it for a year? But yeah, I forgot about it for a year and just found it the other week and went, hang on. Oh yeah, I remember buying this. So I sat down, played it. I'm into, maybe for the first 5-10% of the game. And it's good so far. I like the combat system on it. It's not like Final Fantasy where it's turn-based, where he hits you with fireball, you lose life points. You attack him with measly-ass... sword, he attacks you with great big giant rock. You die. Go back to beginning. That's pathetic. Whereas in Tales of Symphonia, you're able to attack in the turn, where you can attack with magic, then use your sword or whatever implement you're using to attack like 3-4 times and get a chain of combos and get a higher mark. That I like that. That and Star Ocean Till the End of Time, which is again another RPG, but again it's got the same kind of combat system where you can attack multiple times in one move, which is good. Anyways, that, my friends, is the end of the news, and moving straight along, I will be reviewing... What will I be reviewing? I will review an OAV that I was watching over the weekend on Fansub, because I was bored out of my head and I needed something. So what I'm going to review for you after the break is Super Robot Wars Original Generation. Back after this. And we're back, and I hope you guys like those promos. I spent hours searching for them. Well, I spent minutes. Well, maybe not minutes, maybe seconds. Well, it took minutes to download them. So, yeah, I can go fall back on my second choice. Yeah, here's the review for Super Robot Wars Original Generation. For those of you who don't know, Super Robot Wars Original Generation is an animation based off the Super Robot Wars games released in Japan. I think, as far as I know, only the Game Boy Advance version of, I think, number 2 or number 1 has actually made it out to the United States. It's never going to hit the streets in Europe. No way, Jose. If it took this long to get one game out in the States, it's going to take forever to get out, and by that time the Game Boy Advance won't even be marketed, let alone... Is it still being marketed? Somebody correct me anyways. Okay, sorry, back to the review. Super Robot Wars takes place after the events of the second Super Robot Wars game, but it doesn't include any of the any characters whatsoever from the TV series that they've picked up. As far as I know, they have like Getter Robo and Amuro Ray from Gundam, and Unit 1 or Unit 0 from Evangelion. I don't know. Again, I'm only cursorily glancing over the Wikipedia entry on it. But this takes place with the characters from the second game. And basically the plot is the Earth has been attacked by aliens once or twice, and they now have a defense force of transforming mechs that can, on command, become a giant robot, a.k.a., you know, tokusatsu show, like Power Rangers, for example, or they can fight individually. And the military decides to roll out a new type of mech, which is the VTX-1 Vartal, which is, you know, it's the creme de la creme, it's the most expensive, but what they don't know is that the Vartal units themselves have been hijacked by somebody as of yet unknown, who's using them for their own ends. And on the day of the announcement for the new unit, the new unit attacks every single Earth defense outpost and station, and it wipes out the entire convention center where the unit was going to be unveiled. And the entire defense forces are thrown into disarray because, quite literally, they are caught completely off guard. And only the core group of heroes from the Super Robot Wars game survive long enough to gather their wits and find out who's after them. I'm not going to spoil it for you. The only thing I will say is that the drones themselves, the units, get around having to attack the Earth defenses by having something called the ODE network system. And that basically means that the ODE controls everything as a single mind, which means that every time a unit encounters an opponent that destroys it, the unit transmits all the data just before it's destroyed, and it then goes on to the next unit, which will be able to defend itself against said attacker. I don't know enough about Super Robot Wars to tell you, you know, that's a good rendition of that character or this character. All I can tell you is the characters themselves are quite good. They range from people who, you know, are silent yet heroic to... There's this one girl, I'm going to just see if I can find her. I think it's Ryusei Date, or I think it's one of the girls, and she's got red hair. She's absolutely ditzy, and you're sitting there going, how the hell is she in this shell? But anyways, it's okay, it all works, it doesn't detract from it. The only thing I will say is that you don't actually need to see Robot Wars to actually get this OAV. It's a good OAV series. Yeah, I was very surprised when I was looking through the credits, director Jun Kawagoe, and apparently Kawagoe directed, amongst other things, the new Getarobo OAV. He directed Shin Getarobo versus Neo Getarobo, and he also directed some of the episodes of Transformers Energon. All of the Vartal units are CG, and it's very easy to see that somebody involved in Transformers Energon was involved in this, because it's very, very like Energon. At least the drones move very like some of the characters from Energon. The action sequence is very well put together. They kind of start off kind of ham-fisted, where the drone is kind of faster than the Earth Defense Forces. But as the Earth Defense Forces up their game, the battles and the dogfights become faster and faster and faster, until you get to the climax of the OAV, which I won't spoil for you, which is just a basic free-for-all in the skies over Earth. Or at least the space over Earth. So, you know, it's pretty cool. I'd recommend this to anyone who's seen stuff like Gravion, or earlier stuff like Dangayo. It's good like that. There isn't a lot of tokusatsu style robot link up. I think it only happens like once in the show. That's it. Presumably for cost reasons or for animation reasons. Other than that, the units are more or less individual, and they fight their dogfights individually. It's very good. Very good. That's about it for the review. The only thing I will say is that the opening theme and the ending theme are produced by Jam Project. That's about it. Oh, one last thing. When I was checking the ANN listing for this, it says that Super Robot Wars is going to get its own TV series later this year or early next year. If that's the case, I will definitely be watching it. It looks like it's going to be a good series, so long as they can stretch out an OAV series into 26 episodes, or 13 episodes, if the case may be. Anyways, that's the end of the reviews. I think I'll play some music from the Podsafe Music Network, and then at the halfway point, we will go into the interview. See you guys after this.
So you want to hear people talk about Japanese cartoons?
You know, anime.
But you think the other anime podcasters just aren't nerdy enough?
Sounds like you need to join forces with the Anime World Order,
where each week, three self-proclaimed experts offer you reviews
of titles both new and classic, news and commentary,
rants, convention reports, interviews with fandom,
and some hentai and yaoi for good measure.
So search for anime in the iTunes music store,
or visit our website at animeworldorder.com.
Anime World Order, revealing the truth about anime, one podcast at a time.
Hi, this is Apocalypse Dal, and I'd like to tell you about my podcast novel, Brace for Impact. This novel follows the story of Apocalypse Dow, hey, that's me, and Michaloha, my arch enemy, as we join forces to journey across the country for a common cause. Along the way, we encounter truckers, pro wrestlers, robots, ghosts, sex-craved middle-aged Japanese women, insane farmers, a plot to destroy the internet, and midget cowboys. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can check out the website at www.freepodcastnovel.com or do a search for Brace for Impact in the directories. Thanks a lot.
Some of the music used on today's show has been brought to you by the PodSafe Music Network. Check them out at music.podshow.com. Just listening to Alex Kibi, is that how you pronounce it? His track "Simples," taken from his album. Sorry, Alex. In Blues, which is available from the PodSafe Music Network, and I will put a link up to Alex's page on said website in the show notes. Up next is a halftime message, and then we will go straight to the interview, and then I'll do a small wrap-up, folks, and then that'll be it. Class will be over, and you can go home for the summer. Okay? Talk to you after this. This halftime break has been brought to you by Diet Coke with lime. Diet Coke with lime. Eat it, Michaloha. Hi guys, it's Eber from Eber's Choice, and today I have on the show with me Jerome, hang on, I've got to get his name right or he's going to kill me, Mazandarani. I got that right, didn't
I? That's right, you got that, that's pretty good, Mazandarani.
Yeah, I was just sitting there nervous as hell looking at the name on the screen going, I really hope I get this right. Anyways, Jerome is the marketing executive at Manga Entertainment UK.
And that's right.
He's described lovingly on the Domodachi 2006 page as the driving force for the marketing division at Manga. So what, you know, for people who don't know Jerome, what is a marketing executive's role? What does he do?
Well, well, generally you're more likely to hear the title marketing manager. I guess the difference between an executive and a manager is an executive executes things, not literally.
Yeah.
I guess generally an executive's working under an MD or a marketing manager, and we implement the plans that the marketing manager brings down. Currently, my role is a bit confusing because I don't have a marketing manager, so I tend to be
your own boss.
Yeah, well, we have a UK MD,
yeah,
for Manga. We share an office with a company called Anchor Bay Entertainment, and they're like one of the UK's premium horror labels. They've done like the Hellraiser box sets, Halloween.
Yeah, I was checking out the Anchor Bay site, and I see a lot of crossover between Anchor Bay and Manga.
That's right. There's a company in America called IDT Entertainment, and they acquired Anchor Bay several years ago, and then in addition to Anchor Bay, they also bought Manga, and so it made sense in the UK to have Manga running out of the Anchor Bay office.
Yeah.
So
I was just going to ask, how long have you been the marketing executive there?
We share an MD. We've got Colin Lomax, the MD for the UK, for Anchor Bay and Manga.
So how long have you been working for Manga yourself?
I started in January 2005.
Oh, right.
So I haven't been here a very long time.
Oh,
it's been very eventful, 16 months or whatever it's been, 17 months.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, what has been the difference between the quality of Manga DVDs since Anchor Bay became paired up with you? Because I was checking out some of the cases in the local shop, and mm-hmm. I noticed that there's a distinct difference between before IDT acquired Manga and afterwards. Like, the quality in sound and visual goes up. It like the original ones from like 4 or 5 years ago when the company used to be owned by I think it was Palm Pictures. It's kind of like it was a decent effort, and they did everything essential. But now that IDT has acquired Manga, it seems that, you know, Anchor Bay seems to have some influence in the quality control, because I see like DTS and Dolby Digital soundtracks, and wherever possible they try and acquire a widescreen image. So was that an internal decision at Manga, or was
that's
that
something? Right? It was a concerted effort to make sure we were sort of the market leader as far as value for money on our releases. We wanted to lift the bar on what we were offering for consumer in the UK as well. So that's why, you know, we've tried to bring 5.1 mixes onto all of our releases, which tried to bring in, you know, widescreen as well as normal 4x3 if we can. We also, you know, obviously we've made some of our own extras. Like, I think the best example is probably the Millennium Actress. We actually made an English language dub for that here in the UK, which is probably one of the first times it's been a long time since your dub's been done here. And
I was just going to ask you, how have operations at Manga changed, seeing as how the headquarters now is no longer in London, it's now based in Chicago? Like,
well, yeah, that's interesting. Well, you know, obviously our parent company is American, and you know, there's a much bigger operation over there for Ankh Bay and Manga. But essentially, the UK is autonomous in its own way. We answer to the same, you know, the same head office and accountants, and we have to do the numbers every month and keep them happy.
Yeah.
But we have advantages at being in a smaller market. There's not as much competition to acquire new product.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a much fuller release schedule currently. Yeah. We've managed to bounce back. Manga had a lot of difficulties before IDT bought them. They had a cash flow problem, and they didn't pick up any new licenses over a year.
I was just going to ask you. Sorry for cutting across you there. There was a huge build-up of interest in anime during the Pokemon boom when 4Kids Entertainment and Warner were really, really pushing Pokemon as a commodity. But since Pokemon has, I won't say it's died in interest, but it's not as much a dominant force anymore in the market.
Mm-hmm.
But how has the scene changed for manga entertainment now that the bubble for Pokemon has more or less essentially burst and the market has kind of readjusted to what it was before Pokemon was dominant? How has manga changed for that?
Well, you know, I think the Pokemon question is Pokemon's been tremendously important, I think, for the UK industry. I think there's the UK industry and the European anime business is doing very well. It's very healthy. It's growing, contrary to a lot of home entertainment sales, which is sort of slumping. There's still quite a bit of room of growth, and I think that's credited mainly with Pokemon. It's brought in a new generation of young, energetic fans to anime.
I was just going to say, when I was chatting to some of the listeners before the show, they were saying to me, like, a lot of them are now, like, 18, 19, and they got into anime with Pokemon, and now the Pokemon is kind of diminished. They now have moved on to other stuff, so they've moved on to, like, more classic stuff, like Evangelion, the TV series and the movies, and stuff like classic stuff like Blackjack, which I know manga at some point has released.
We've got Blackjack OVA, but I don't think anyone's ever released a series in the UK.
Yeah. How is manga meeting other companies in the UK? Like, if I'd have checked like 5-6 years ago, I'd have said, you know, manga, as you said, for all of its problems a couple of years ago, more or less had the market kind of to itself a couple of years ago, and now it's kind of changed because now you have, like, for example, you have Bandai starting to move in again, you have ADV, who now...
MVM.
I was going to... how is manga dealing with companies? I don't like to say that, you know, the groups of companies are kind of like shoving each other around for market share, but...
No.
Like, how do you deal with, like... 1 month or 1 week they release, you know, the volume one of a new series. How does manga, like, deal with that?
Oh, well, I find that, you know, we're all different size companies, and yeah, we are all competitors, but it's not cutthroat. I mean, we have got a really good relationship with Tony at MVM and Hugh David, who's marketing manager at ADV, as well as sales team at ADV. We also, you know, get on very well with the Bandai guys, and we all have the same goal to grow the market.
Yeah.
So, and we're all different size companies. Manga's probably the biggest, I think. I think we have the lot, you know, the furthest reach in the market. There's things we're able to do at the moment on volume and price, which our competitors can't because they're much smaller. But, you know, at the same time, we want to be careful not to do anything like flood the market with too many releases and have a repeat of what happened in the you know, the mid-90s, where just too much stuff came in. I think all of the labels now have learned from what's happened, and we're all looking at having the best releases, you know, trying to pick up the key stuff, so that's why we've acquired Naruto, that's why we've got Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, you know, MVM may have things like Samurai Champloo. Most of the best anime from Japan, that's TV series wise, has come out of Japan in the last several years, is getting released here now, and that's really positive.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you the point about Naruto.
I was just checking with a couple of fans from the site, and they were asking me, you know, if you're going to ask Drum. The one thing that they did ask was the Naruto release. Will you be including both the Japanese and the English track?
Yes, we will.
And will it be uncut?
Yeah, it will.
I won't say that it's an almost panic situation, but I do find with especially when you talk to things that about the fans when you talk about titles like Naruto and Dragon Ball Z, there's this perception in the United States, especially when they're released by people like Viz. Viz tend to kind of cut down and try and release as universally friendly a release as they possibly can.
We're businesses though as well, and Naruto is the number one rated TV show for its time slot on a Saturday night, 9 p.m. Now that's not just for Cartoon Network; that is at 9 p.m. in America on those networks, on the cable networks. That is the most watched show. Mm-hmm. So it's rather than fans, you know, nitpicking about how the distributors are releasing their favourite shows. Because I don't like the fact that they release an English language version first, 4 episodes on the DVD for the kids market. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're also releasing Naruto uncut. So they're trying to please everyone. Because for every fan that wants the Japanese language version,
there's
10 kids that just want to see the one I've just seen on Cartoon Network. So, and you know the Naruto license is incredibly valuable, and it's a very big acquisition. It wasn't cheap. Mm-hmm. So we as a company, all of us, we will have to see the best way to recoup on the expense.
Yeah.
So but fans in the UK and fans in America as well, they don't have anything to worry about. What they'll be getting with our manga's Naruto uncut release, which is coming out on the 21st of August. Will be episodes 1 to 13, the uncut Japanese language version with English subtitles, and we'll also include the Cartoon Network edit, which is the 9 p.m. edit. Technically that's uncut as well, because Jetix will be having to make cuts for the UK TV broadcast.
All right. I was just going to ask you, that was just another point. There seemed to be like a I'll give you some backstory. When I got into anime in the early to mid 90s, manga was the only company around that released anything of any quality, and the only way you could either see it was either to go out and buy an extremely expensive VHS, or you could sit around until 1:30 in the morning and watch them on Channel 4, and that's how I watched most of Manga Entertainment's back catalog. But I noticed around the late 90s to the 2000, that kind of support on mainstream television kind of dried up for anime, and like I think the last thing I saw Channel 4 release with anything to do with anime was their TV release of the subtitled version of Blood the Last Vampire. So what happened to the market for that? Did companies kind of say, you know, we're not interested anymore, or did it just simply dry up?
I wasn't around at the time, but from, you know, speaking with other people in the industry that have been here longer and associates like Jonathan Clements, people like that. Consensus seems to be that TV has an ongoing love affair with anime, and that there's a cycle where stations pick up a lot of anime or do a special programming block, get very excited about it. Something might have piqued their excitement, be it like Spirited Away, Howl's Moon Castle sort of phenomenon, or when Spirited Away won an Oscar. And they'll all be clamouring to show anime on TV. Then they get burnt because the viewing figures aren't as good as they hoped, and they don't have anything to do with it again. Then they seem to forget several years later and come back.
When you're talking to the TV companies, do you try and warn them that, like a lot of things in anime, too much of a good thing can be bad for you? Like, do you try and warn them that, you know, you really should try and space out your time slots? And do they heed your warning?
Well, generally TV is going to will buy things in packages. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they might want to pick up. Very rarely would they come to us with just one film like Akira to show.
Yeah.
They might want Akira and Ghost in the Shell and Ninja Scroll. that might programming in. Generally with TV, you know, the trend seems to be they'll like with people like ITV2 is they'll have they might have a season like a Jean-Claude Van Damme season, stuff like that. They might also want to do an anime season or a cyberpunk season, so they might want to show Akira and Ghost in the Shell with maybe The Matrix. So it all depends on what they want to do. I mean, you know, it's easy for us to get films like Ghost in the Shell and Akira onto TV. It's not easy to get Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex onto TV, which is a real shame.
Yeah, because you're trying really hard. Like I've seen most of Ghost in the Shell season one, and it seems to be just a very good continuation of the first two movies, but. I can understand from your perspective. It's very hard to sell 26 episodes, or 26 episodes, to a TV network and try and say, you know, you can sustain this, and especially for like a British or a European station, which would not have the same kind of market share for anime that say Cartoon Network in the United States would have. So it must be extremely difficult to try and get that across that it will be a good series and you know it'll work out in the end, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's you know, it's an unknown entity here, you know, the standalone complex series. I mean, they might know Ghost in the Shell, but, you know, it's quite a deep sci-fi show. And it's finding the right place, right home for it. Luckily, in the States, they've got Cartoon Network has Adult Swim, and they've done, you know, they sort of said, let's, you know, I guess in America, it's more acceptable for adults to watch animation. It's still here. You've still got to deal with people that can't get their heads around the fact that there's animation for people that are over 12.
Yeah, and you're.
Do you know what I mean?
You're kind of walking the tightrope that's existed for as long as I can remember anime being around in a mainstream format. You're constantly having to walk the tightrope of you're trying to convince people that there is more to anime than simply kids' cartoons, and you're also trying to avoid people taking the extreme reaction of say, like I'll give you an example, manga's release of Legend of the Overfiend, which was. Manga, from my perspective, from how I've interpreted, manga just tried to release it, and then like concerned groups kind of took a very extreme reaction to Overfiend, and said, you know, this is what's wrong with Japanese animation, and this is you know, this is the benchmark for everything else that comes out, and you're trying desperately.
Yeah, and it's a shame, and you know, I think the old manga reveled in that sort of notoriety they got with it. It was an incredibly popular release, you know, and they made a lot of money from it. You know, there's nothing like publicity. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad.
Yeah,
unfortunately, it tainted the whole anime scene because. You know, when it comes to your sort of News of the World, Daily Mail reading, Sun reading, sort of punters,
you're going to get one editor in a newspaper who is going to say, you know, this has got to be reported on and
ban this sick Asian filth or something like that. You know what I mean? But you know what? I mean, so much. I mean, I think we, you know, things like Pokemon, Miyazaki. You know, manga growing up with these wonderful other labels like MVM and ADV and the work they've been doing. I think, you know, that people now in the UK, they know, you know, they know that it's a really diverse thing, that they know that anime isn't actually a genre. Anime is Japanese, English for animation.
Yeah, well,
and they know that it spans all types of genres, you know, sci-fi, you know, teen drama, romance, action, adventure, you know, comedy. It's just so diverse, and I think generally with the UK, in the UK, there's with the Asian film boom as well, that
people are starting to be a bit more acceptable of them.
Yeah, got a very sophisticated audience, and that's really encouraging.
I was just going to ask you there about Standalone Complex. You brought up Standalone Complex. Is it because you, Manga and Bandai, produced the original movie that you went into collaboration with Bandai to release Standalone Complex?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Manga originally produced the first Ghost in the Shell film, which meant that they were part of the production committee.
Yeah.
So if there's any Ghost in the Shell related program or film wants to get made, our MD, Kari Mafeme, sits on there as an executive producer on the committee. Has a very good relationship with Production IG and the president, Mr. Ishikawa. And, you know, we're lucky enough to be in the same position with things like Blood Last Vampire as well. If anything wants to be done with that, you know, we have an interest in that. You know, generally a producer, if you see some end of show credits and it says it's an executive producer or associate mm-hmm. producer, that basically means it's a guy that's helped with the funding.
Yeah.
Might be, you know. So, you know, Manga was lucky enough to get help get Ghost in the Shell made.
It
really paid back.
Oh yeah. I'm just bringing up the subject of, you know, Manga releasing movies. Why was it for a very long time that Manga just handled either feature films or OVAs?
Because they're easier to sell.
Mm-hmm.
They're easier to market. There's no investment required of the viewer or the consumer.
Yeah, it's just a simple one purchase, and that's the end of it.
Pick it up. You like the look. You like the look of the trailer. You like the look of the packaging. You know, just come along, pick it up, and give it a whirl. Whereas, you know, if you release something like Soundline Complex 07 volumes, so they've got to come back every 2 months to pick it up, and that takes, you know, that sort of serialization is getting trickier and trickier to do. We're lucky with Soundline Complex has a brilliant fan base mm-hmm. in the UK, well, all over the world, dedicated fan base. And for those fans that go out and buy, the latest installment every, you know, 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same for someone that maybe goes and buys, you know, the latest issue with Spider-Man or something. It's kind of like the, you know, the collector mentality and whatnot, you know. But the box sets do really well to see.
I was just going to ask you, what made Manga change its policy? Like, to come up for the interview, I was kind of just doing a bit of research, and I came across like very surprising results. Like, Standalone Complex seasons 1 and 2 have been are either in the process of being released or have been released by Manga, and then you have Tokyo Underground as a complete box set. What made Manga shift its policy towards TV series?
Well, Tokyo Underground, I don't think we'd sustain good sales on Tokyo Underground if we'd released it in individual volumes. I think we made the decision to make a very high value for money box set and just get it out there. It is expensive to make these box sets, and we do need to sell quite a few before we break even.
Yeah, it's good.
But in the long run, it seemed like the better thing to do. If we'd released them, Tokyo Underground, like Ghost in the Shell, over 7 volumes, you'd see a pretty decent ship and sales for the first couple of volumes, and then you just see it
just
drop down.
Just a drop off as people either didn't want to keep burning money or just got lost interest.
No, that's right. And so, you know, there's other things where we'll be trying that out with. I mean, with Heat Guy J, we've got the final installment of that will be out in the end of August as well, at the same time as Naruto. And what we're doing with that is making the third volume available as a separate Amorite.
All right.
For those people that have already gone and bought volumes 1 and 2, but we'll also be releasing it as a complete box set.
Right.
For $24.99.
For people who can't sustain that kind of multi-volume.
That's right. So it's crucial of getting the price mm-hmm. and the package right. And I think with a series like Heat Guy Joe, which has gotten great press and good reviews here, but the fans haven't gone out en masse and bought it. But it's not a Ghost in the Shell level sort of release, and I think we need to entice these people in the shops. We need to say, well, look, it's a great series. We really believe in it. It's got great packaging.
Yeah,
it's a really fun show, and it's something you really should buy this year. You know, and you know, we're giving them the perfect reason. We're saying, come out. You can get all 26 episodes, Japanese and mm-hmm. English, over 6 discs,
and
you know, for less than £30. So.
Yeah, and like you're packaging it and you know you're spending a hell of a lot of money on it, and you're saying to the fans, from my perspective, you're saying to the fans, you know, like, listen, we've done what you've asked, we've given you a decent release, and we've given you like the English and the Japanese track, you know, give this kind of title a chance. Like I've seen titles that I won't insult anyone by naming video labels, but I've seen some video labels just release anything in any format with no concern or regard whatsoever for the fans, and say, you know, here you go, this is anime, you like it, don't you? And you know, you have to wonder about the mentality of some video labels where
I'm not just saying this, we really do listen to the fans, sometimes more, sometimes to our
detriment.
detriment because you can't please everyone all the time, and you need to accept that as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, overall, I think, you know, it's a two-way street, and I think, you know, I like going out to the conventions and meeting the fans. I like the fact that people like yourself and with the online fan news sites are run by fans, and I get to have a dialogue with them. We go to, you know, we'll be going to AniCon in August, and that's a great time, you know,
get together
over a beer and talk to guys like Damien at Iron Anime and Paul from UK Anime News and yourself.
And then, you know, meet and greet the fans and receive praise and abuse at the same time.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, one of the first thing I wanted to do when I took the job was to turn around Manga's image, because we had a terrible reputation with the fans. They all of the goodwill manga had built up when it launched, they seem to have totally lost with shoddy releases, poor quality control, and an arrogance, not really listening to what fans wanted. And you know, I wanted to change that. I think we've done a really good job today.
How soon after you took over, when you started to implement this new policy of trying to change your image, how soon afterwards did you start to see positive response come back from people?
Very quickly. I started in January. We went out to London Expo, and that was a really well attended convention. You know, it's not just anime, but obviously the anime element to that show is incredibly important now. And it's you know, I really believe in conventions, consumer conventions, and I don't see why the UK can't have something as good as San Diego Comic Con.
No,
I see London Expo as being the best potential, you know, platform for an event of that type. And obviously, anime with London Expo, anime I think has become the main focus. Anime and manga, as in the manga books, not the manga label. You know, that was good.
I was just going to ask you. This is probably about the last two questions I'm going to ask you. What titles can the fans look forward to? I know you've said Naruto and you've said Samurai Champloo and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. What are those titles? Because I recently purchased the Region 1 version of Karas, and I was very, very surprised by that. I was I'd heard that it was good, and I also heard it was bad, and I kind of sat down and had a look of it, and I was impressed by manga. I won't say you went off and got extremely big names for the English dub, but you seemed to treat the film as more than just simply a knockout release.
No, it was an event. I mean, God, it took long enough for the guys to make it. I mean, it's been a real labour of love for the studio that made it in Japan. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to present it as a feature. In Japan, they've released each 25-minute OVA separately. And they charge 25. I mean, that's the thing people here complain about twice. In Japan, you're spending nearly £25 per release on Karas, and they've released each 25-minute OVA individual DVD.
That's in six parts, isn't it, in Japan?
It's six parts. That's the thing. I mean, we did present it as a feature because we thought it's quality-wise it is, but obviously it is a serial, and it needs you need the next part, Karas the Revelation, and we're hoping to... Well, the plan is to release that in time for Christmas, but we'll have more information on that later. There will be a second part for all those people that are wondering what
how's it going to turn out. Because I did not watch the whole of it, but my brother who saw the ad on Manga's website, he just raved about it, and he said, can you get it, and I said, yeah, I'll get it for you. And he sat down one night at like 2:30 in the morning, and then he phoned me and said, you know, it's brilliant, you've got to come over, you've got to see this. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I did sit down and watch it, and I like how it, you know, it hinges on at the very end of it, where, you know, will the hero succeed or not, you know. I liked how it was, you clipped it off at a particular point.
Think it was a nice it reminds me of some of the classic manga releases from the early 90s, like Guyver. I like the sort of dark superhero aspect of it. Mm-hmm. The sort of bio suit stuff and the transforming and all that type of stuff. It's a Guyver sort of style superhero tale.
I was just going to ask you about Guyver. I know that at one point manga did actually have the license for Guyver. What would be your opinion about the updated TV series that was recently released in Japan?
Well, you know, there was talk about that, and I don't know if we're requiring it or not, or if it's gone cold now. I'd love to see it. I haven't seen it yet.
I've seen like artwork and clips from it from the Japanese sites, and it looks good. I was very surprised because ADV helped to produce that, and yet for some strange reason, ADV feel that there's no market for it in the United States, which kind of, you know, represents, I'm not going to say a loss, because, you know, if ADV wants to support Guyver, that's fine, but it seems very strange to go out, pay for a series, and then, you know, not release it.
That is strange, but, you know, there's so many, you know, different ways a company can generate revenue. So, you know, even if they've part financed the series like Guyver, you know, it might not have been good business sense for them to opt into distribution. If you if we do produce a series, it doesn't necessarily mean we're guaranteed for the UK license. They still might require an advance and you know, a full agreement and royalty rate and on sales, you know. So so sometimes it's you know, companies like Bandai produce loads of stuff, but they don't necessarily distribute all of it. So it's just, I think, in nature of the beast, and you know, but hopefully for Guyver fans in the UK, it will get released.
Either by you or by somebody else.
Yeah, we don't have plans at the moment. I mean, the other thing fans in the UK have to take into account is the business side of things, and it's a jungle out there, and you know, sometimes we can't afford these licenses. They want unrealistic amounts of money to pick some of these things up, and you know, sometimes it's just, you have to weigh up. You have to look at, you know, what you realistically think you'll sell, and if the numbers don't match,
you got to explain it to head office.
Yeah, you have to move on to the next thing.
So, final question: where does the company go from here, from this point on? Like, I know you've got releases, but have you got plans as the company goes?
We've got plans as the company to grow the company more. We think there's a lot of scope to do that in the UK. We you know, we've just released Survive Style 5, and that's done really well. And we do, manga's always had a, you know, a bit of a track record with live action films, so I wouldn't be surprised if you see us release the odd live action film. I'd love to get some more kaiju movies. We've got Tetsujin 28 coming out in October, the live action film of that.
I'd seen that on the release schedule, and I was very surprised because, like, I have fond memories of Gigantor when it was completely unpopular to watch.
I mean, you know, again, that's something I keep banging on about to anyone that'll listen, because I really think it's a great show. I think it's really well done, really clever, and I like it because it's got an old school feel about it. But I think for a lot of people that are sort of more accustomed to Full Metal Alchemist and the real snazzy sort of mecha stuff, you know, giant robots are still incredibly popular, but maybe you know, people's idea of what a giant robot is isn't the more old school stuff. But, you know, Gigantor or Tetsujin 28, he's an icon in Japan. He's more famous than Mickey Mouse, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to start releasing Astro Boy in the UK, the original colour series. We're going to
I'd seen the advertisements for it for the US release.
That's right. So we'll probably do something similar to what they've done. And, you know, obviously we've got more Naruto, and I'm really looking forward to working on Naruto. It's really exciting, and I think it's going to be really popular.
Okay.
I need all the fans listening to go out and buy it in the week of release.
Did you hear that, fans? Now, you've got to go out and you've got to buy it, otherwise Jerome's going to have to seriously explain why this expensive series that costs so much.
And I don't want to hear anyone saying, I'm buying the American release, not the UK one. I'll be very upset.
Yeah, well, like, if presented in dual format, I mean, like, I have spoken to one or two people who have said, like, Ghost in the Shell Innocence was released by Go Fish in the United States. That's DreamWorks independent label, and they released it as just an art house style film, i.e., just with the Japanese track. And I have heard of a lot of people who said, you know, what's the English dub on Innocence like? And I said, you know, it's quite good. You know, most of the cast from Standalone Complex came back for this film, so there is continuity between the series and the movie. Even if you've never seen either one, you can still, you know, jump in and go, oh, that's very familiar.
No, well, there's some really exciting stuff happening with Ghost in the Shell standalone complex, which if I tell you about it now, I'll have to kill you.
Yeah, that's all right.
But you can expect a lot more Ghost in the Shell activity into next year, even though, and this is my cryptic clue, even though the second gig series is already finished in Japan and will roll out the last second gig DVD in December. There's still a hell of a lot of stuff going on with that, and it's just getting better and better, and I can't wait to, you know, to tell you guys more.
And on that cryptic note, we're going to end the interview. Jerome, okay, thank you very much for being a guest.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
All right, okay. Bye. And my thanks again to Jerome for being able to do the interview at such short notice. I literally only gave him like a week or so, and I hadn't spoken to him at all before that interview, which is kind of why, you know, I kind of repeat my sentences a lot. Sorry about that, folks, if it was a bit annoying for you. Again, thanks to Jerome. And on that note, folks, for me, it's time for me to go. As always, if you need to contact me, you can contact me at eperschoice.podomatic.com. You can leave a comment there. You can contact me via email. It's eperschoice@gmail.com. eperschoice@podomatic.com. You can ring the K7 number. That's 206-339-3337 or 206-339-EEP. Don't call the number that's on the show notes if it's different from the one I called out. You won't get anything there. It's a bad number that I had to replace. As always, folks, I am your boy in the Western Hemisphere, trying very hard to disseminate between the chafe and the wheat of anime and manga. That's about it, folks, and that's it for my show for this week. I will talk to you guys as soon as I possibly can. Until then, MacArthur's, shine on, shine on. One last thing, folks, before I go. Quick shout out to Kyle Dragonash from the Otaku Generation crew. Hi, Kyle, and I hope your dad's feeling a lot better soon.
It's time to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of gum.